This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
You the assistant or secretary to Alan McCarthy, please?
Assistant, yes.
Oh, yes. My name is Captain Maurice Seddon, S-E-D-D-O-N.
Yes.
May I know your name, please?
My name's Valda Self. I think we have spoken before.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Valda?
Self.
Yes, we have indeed.
Yes.
It's Miss Self, isn't it?
Yes.
Miss Self, you may remember, or you may not, because you've probably handled an awful lot of these inquiries, way back in September, 6th of September, I delivered a mass of papers to your office, and I made various telephone calls thereafter, hoping that I may get an equity card, which I very badly need, because I'm very poor, and without it, I can't earn what I need to earn. And the last conversation I had was, now let me see, it seems that I was speaking on the 3rd of October, and then again on the 4th of October. And I was told then, I'm not sure by whom. Oh, it might have been you. Could it have been you?
Well, probably. I mean, if you could carry on to say what I said.
Oh, wait a minute now. Hold on. I did speak with you on the 25th of September. And you were then the successor, as I understood it, to Andrew Cosgrave. Wasn't that right?
Your line keeps breaking up. Can I call you back?
No, I suspect it isn't breaking up. I suspect it's just a type of instrument you haven't spoken to before. You should be receiving my speech perfectly clearly, but periodically punctuated by clicks, rather like the send-receive clicks of a radio telephone. Is that what's happening?
Yes.
Ah, well then it's perfectly all right. My speech should be reaching you very, very clearly indeed. Is that the case?
Well, apart from when the clicks are going.
Ah, yes. Then I must try not to make the clicks so frequent. Anyway, on the 4th of October, I spoke to someone, and I was told that Mr. Alan McCarthy had the documents. And I had been told in a previous call by someone that it was hoped that possibly the Assistant General Secretary, if I got that right, might be able to grant me this card on the basis of my experience.
Yes.
Could you very kindly tell me what the situation is?
Can you hold on a minute, please?
Thank you. Hello?
Yes, I've just had a word with Alan, but he's a bit tied up at the moment. Can he call you tomorrow morning?
Yes, surely. Oh, hang on a second. Tomorrow morning. Now, that could be difficult, because I've got a tiny business and somebody's coming to see me. It rather depends what time tomorrow morning. If he could ring me... Well, really, I would say this, the earlier he can ring me, the better.
About 10-ish?
Unfortunately, there's somebody coming from Birmingham, and you know, traffic conditions being what they are, one doesn't know when they'll arrive. If I should be busy with this man, and I'm only a one-man band, there'll be an answering machine. And in that event, can I ring him back later if he should have had the misfortune to meet the answering machine?
He's going to be in the office tomorrow afternoon, you see. That's why he said he'll call you in the morning. He's got a meeting tomorrow afternoon.
Right. What time does he go out?
Can you hold on it, please?
Yes.
I've got small quantity EL33, which is the same, I believe, as KT61. One moment, I just put up and checking it.
Right.
Call. It's 325, this Continental. And I have one or two, I might have Philips or Mallard, it's £9.50.
£9.60.
50.
that many months ago, and I mean, I might be able to check on my diary, if it were ever necessary, to find out exactly when it was. It was certainly before Christmas. It could have been as long ago as August last year, that I had occasion to visit the house of my neighbour, my address being 138 Horton Road.
Yeah, that's Datchet, isn't it?
That's it, it's in Datchet. But although my address is Horton Road, my entrance is Homely Road, so it's in effect next to the entrance of Gables number 2. Mm-hmm. Now, at Gables number 2, there lives a rather difficult neighbour who is, as far as I can make out, although he doesn't acknowledge this, I have the impression that he is, as they say, Australian.
Right.
He admits to having lived many years there, but says that he's English. Mm-hmm. Well, who knows what he is. Anyway, he is a man approaching 40 years of age. He is unmarried. He used to live together with a girlfriend by whom he had a presumably illegitimate child. That relationship broke up recently, and he's now on his own. One understands that he is a male model for the making of advertising films.
Okay.
Be this as it may, he's a difficult neighbour. He's given to alcohol heavily. And he has very, very late night parties, which go on till 1 and 2 in the morning with loud blaring wireless in the garden, so-called barbecues. And he has a sort of group of habitués who are around him, one of whom is said to be his agent. And these people also drink heavily and appear also to be connected with Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the date I'm specifying, which would have been sometime between August and Christmas, I had occasion to go round to his house to see him on some purely administrative matter affecting neighbours. I don't recall what it was, and on entering his house I found two or more guests there, and I was immediately introduced to one of them, whom I had not previously met, and his introductory words on being introduced were, "I'm so sorry, I'm so very drunk." And I said, "That's perfectly all right, don't worry a bit." And that was almost all I said to him, except that I lived next door, and I thought no more of it. To my surprise, about 5 days later, there was an incoming telephone call in a female voice that I didn't know. It was an unknown woman, who seemed to be in a very confused state of mind and had the greatest difficulty expressing herself.
Mm.
The only way I was able to find out what it was that she wanted and who she was by a system of question and answer. And in the end, I managed to resolve it. She was the wife of this man I'd briefly met in my neighbour's house 5 days earlier. And what she was trying to tell me was this. A dog, unknown to them, had allegedly adopted them on the preceding Friday. I remember this very well, the preceding Friday, which would have made it again about, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 days before the telephone call.
Mm-hmm.
And this dog had arrived allegedly with very sore paws, and they had reason to believe that someone had thrown it out on the motorway,
mm-hmm.
and it had adopted them.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband had instructed her that he had met me at the neighbour's house, and that I had dogs, and I also had a very large garden, quarter of an acre of wilderness, and I was to be approached by her at his instruction, with a view to seeing whether I would be willing to take on this dog, which was more than they could cope with for a variety of reasons. So I said, I've no idea, I'm rather taken aback by this. I do like dogs, I'm fond of them, and the dogs I have come, you know, they're unwanted dogs, which other people have been cruel to and I've taken on. So I will willingly come and see this dog, but whether I will take it on, I cannot tell you until I see it. And then I'll have to try it out for a few days and let you know whether it fits in with my animals. I looked at this dog, and immediately, you know the way it is with animals, you can very often hit it off straight away, at once. Well, this happened immediately. We immediately got on very well together, and it was quite apparent that he was a delightful dog. A male brown dog, a mongrel. I would say a certain amount of Alsatian, a certain amount of Labrador, and like me, a Franco-German-English mongrel, I would say another healthy mongrel. Quite a medium, a rather larger than medium dog.
Are you keeping him?
Oh, yes, I am.
So you've got him with you now?
I have him with me now. He's blissfully happy here. I'm fond of him. He's fond of me. There is no problem as far as that is concerned. Problem relates to human relationships, as you will see in a minute. Now, I took the dog on provisionally for a few days to see whether it would fit in. It did, and she was very glad, and it was agreed that I would keep the dog.
Yeah.
A few days after that, she telephoned me again, and she said, "My husband, who, as you know, is very often drunk, came home drunk last night and cried out, 'Lucky,' that is the name of the dog, 'Lucky, Lucky, where's Lucky?' And on being told by me that I had, on his instruction, given the dog to you, Captain Seddon, he said, 'I want Lucky back, get Lucky back.'"
Mm.
"Be fair to the animal, be fair to me. I have taken considerable pains and trouble to cultivate the affection of this animal, and it has taken the effort to get to know me. We have got to know one another very well. We get on very harmoniously. He fits in with my other dogs. He's been with me something of the order of a week now. This is absolute nonsense. I am not, at this juncture, going to part with the dog. I am going to keep it. You must know what you're about. You have distinctly asked me to take on the dog, and I have done so. If at the end of one further week, your husband still wants the dog, but then only if he wants it in a sober moment, not in a drunken moment, then most certainly you shall have it back. But for the time being, and the more so as he was drunk when he said this, I am keeping the dog." The week passed, and I had no news at all. Now, what would you have presumed under those circumstances?
That they wanted you to keep the dog.
Exactly. Well, that is what I concluded.
Mm.
So nothing further was said. Now, during the succeeding months, there were many incidents in which the children were sent round here, or came round here. It's not clear whether to what on what occasions they were sent round by the mother, and to what extent they came round of their own volition, perhaps some cases of one and some of the other. They would come round. I have a very tall fence round my garden. Nevertheless, they would climb up on, you know, these telephone test point boxes, these green metal boxes about 4 feet high.
Mm.
They would climb out on top of this, and standing high up on top so that half their bodies was visible over the top of the fence, they would cry out to Lucky and throw him titbits and entice him. "Lucky, Lucky, come here, come to us."
Mm.
And they would also come and ring my bell. "May we come and talk to Lucky? May we come and see Lucky?" And it seemed to me that this was nonsense. Either they should have the dog or I should have the dog, but not both.
Yeah.
Clearly, if the children kept coming and talking to the dog didn't know where its home was and where it belonged.
Mm.
So I said, "No, I'm sorry, it's not convenient." Well, then there was a recent occasion. I now have to tell you about another of my dogs. One of my other dogs, who has been with me for years and who has never before manifested this problem, recently manifested the problem which I describe as spring fever. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Absolutely being insistent on tearing holes in the fence and running out after bitches in the village and then coming back 4 to 6 hours later,
mm.
with every risk that there might be a fatal accident,
mm.
that I might be legally liable for the accident. Well, this happened on a great many occasions recently, and I mean, and what then would happen was that he would entice the other dog, Lucky, to run with him.
Mm.
The one had torn the hole in the fence, the one with the spring fever, would always return here, and the dog, Lucky, would sometimes be intercepted by the children in the village and would end up at their house. The only way I was able to cure this, and I consulted here the assistant lady to Guthrie, the vet in Slough. I telephoned her and said, "What do I do? What can I do? All I have been able to do so far is put my dog on the train. This is the one with a spring fever." And she said, "Well, you're doing the only thing possible, because my dog has the same problem. They get it at this time of year. And I find that if my dog is not on a train, he runs away the whole time. All you can do is to keep him on the train till the spring fever passes." This I did, and this overcame the problem, albeit in a way that I do not approve of at all. I hate my dog being on a train. But what can I do? Do you agree with her? Is that right?
I think if that's the choice between having him on a chain or letting him run the streets and having an accident, well, you haven't got much choice, really.
I think that's about it. You see, I have a very, very extensive fence, and I'm in relative terms poor compared with the size of the fence.
Mm.
It would cost me thousands to have a new first-class fence put up that would keep a determined dog in.
But it's got to be the right sort of chain, you know. It can't be it's got to be a safe chain that will move with him and not get caught up round his legs and that sort of thing.
Well, it seems to work reasonably well. The only problem is that occasionally he's succeeded in breaking the chain, only very occasionally, and then we have a repetition of this business of a hole in the fence and enticing Lucky out. Now I come to the main problem, On the 20th of May, there was a really big problem. There was a gigantic drunken party going on in the next house. During the course of this, there were sounds indicative that somebody was on my premises, on my ground, who shouldn't be. And at the time, I was too busy to go and check on it. However, 5 minutes later, I went and checked. And when I checked, I found that the dog Lucky, passed to me by them, was missing. The spring fever dog was not missing. He was present. And there were no holes in the fence. So plainly, somebody had been onto my ground, had trespassed, and had removed Lucky.
Mm.
The next morning, I had to wait many hours before I was able to get in contact, because for hours and hours, his telephone was on off the hook while he was presumably recovering from his hangover.
Yes.
Well, eventually, around the middle of the day, the telephone was on the hook, and I was able to get in contact, and I went to see him. And I said, "Now, look, we really must talk in a neighbourly way, you and I." I said, "Your parties give me cause for considerable complaint. I don't normally complain about them, but you did approach me in a very drunken state last night in the road when I was pick up. Oh, by the way, sorry, I must come back to that. During that party, I presumed that somebody had taken the dog. And I said, presumably Lucky is at your house?" And she said, in a very strange way, "Yes."
Mm.
So I went round there to collect the dog. And when I got there and was admitted to the garden for the purpose of taking the dog was not available. He was in the summer house at the far end of the garden with the older of the boys. And when the younger child was sent to the summer house by the mother to collect this dog, the answer came that the older boy refused to give him up and proposed to keep him.
Mm.
And a further message had to be sent by the mother, by the younger child, instructing more firmly than before that indeed the dog was to be released and was to be returned to me. This was done, rather reluctantly, by the older boy. I feel sorry for those children. They want a dog, and I know how good a dog can be for children. But evidently the household is such a drunken one that they really can't keep a dog. So the dog was returned to me. I'm awfully sorry that the whole thing is out of chronological sequence. I should have written it down beforehand. There's something else I must tell you before telling you what my neighbour said when I went to see him the next morning. A little prior to this, I was in Wales for 6 days, and a neighbour of mine was looking after the dog. During that time, there was another escape of the one on the train who broke his chain and who enticed the dog Lucky away. When my neighbour, having been briefed by me before I went away, I told him, "Look here." When he went there to ask for the dog, he was rudely met by this, who said, "Who are you? What do you want?"
Mm.
And when he said he'd come to collect the dog and take it back to Gavin, he said, "No, you can't have it. Go away." So he had to come back 2 days later. But this time he didn't say, "Please, may I?" He said, "I have come to collect that dog and take it to Captain Seven," which he did. Right, now we come back to this incident after the night of the party of the 20th of May, when I had to wait till the middle of the day before my neighbour surfaced. I then went to see him. I said, "You spoke to me in a very drunken way in the street last night." He said, "I'm most awfully sorry. Last night I was terribly, terribly drunk. I was far more drunk than I have been for a very long time." And I said, "Now, will you please tell me what happened with this dog? Because it's quite plain that somebody trespassed on my ground and removed him." "Well," he said, and here I would point out that I cannot tell you what is the veracity of this story. I can only tell you what he told me. He said that during their drunken party, two of the children, one of whom was the eldest son, aged about 13, came round to his house and entered the party and addressed those present and said, "Our mother..." I'm sorry, I have to interject now. My neighbour explained to me that the mother takes Valium. Now, I have no idea if this is true. I emphasise this. I can only tell you that this is what he says. And he went on and said, "Oh, yes," and did a gesture, opening his mouth and throwing the palm of his hand towards the open mouth. He said, "She throws in Valium while she is talking to you and takes it in conjunction with alcohol." Well, if that should be true, as you probably know, Valium and alcohol mix very badly indeed. Indeed, the combination is dangerous. The two eldest children came round to his house while his drunken party was in full swing, stating that their mother, evidently in an intoxicated state, had instructed the children to come and, quote, rescue Lucky, quote, unquote. And this, the drunken party participants, in their confused state, provided assistance for the eldest son to climb over the fence separating the Wright property from this party, using to this end a pile of bricks which was there for building purposes, and helped the child over the fence so that the child might trespass on my ground and take the dog, which he did. All a very startling and strange story. Anyway, I didn't know this at the time, but I imagined the dog must have gone to them, that some sort of trespassing had taken place. So I telephoned on that preceding evening and said, is the dog there? Yes, he is. I went there. There was then this incident I've just described to you where the eldest child was in the summer house and declined to part with the dog. Eventually he did part with the dog. I effectively read her the riot act. I said, look, I'm tired of this nonsense. If you would like to have this dog, please, you are most welcome to have it. If, on the other hand, as I understand, you want me to look after the dog, then you have to leave the dog in peace with me. And the next time there is an incident of this kind, where someone trespasses on my property and removes the dog, or entices the dog to your house, I shall not do what I have hitherto done. I shall come to you and I shall say, inasmuch as you have enticed this dog, I am now not going to look after it any longer. This is an untenable situation. I shall telephone the RSPCA and I shall ask them to take charge of the dog. Is that reasonable? I'm asking you. Do you think that is reasonable?
Are you there now, Captain?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are now. Was that a recording we were listening?
No. Let me explain. I don't use a telephone. I'm a wireless engineer. And in 1962, I invented and designed a piece of apparatus that I'm now using. It should give you great clarity of speech, but it does differ from a telephone in that you can't speak both ways at once.
I see.
So it sounds a bit like a recording.
The trouble was, we've been trying to ask you different things as we've been listening, you
see. So sorry. Over to you. Would you like to ask me the questions now?
Yes, well, the problem that we've got, you see, this is obviously, you need to see a solicitor if they're trespassing on your grounds to start with. You need to call the police. If I can understand the situation you're in, I, my heart goes out to the dog. But the thing is, until you get them to sign over the ownership to you, there is no way that we can take that dog away, because legally the dog belongs to them.
Now, that's a very interesting point. I have no idea who it belongs to. I have to rely on you for that information. If there is, you say, if I don't have a document from them signing it over, then it's theirs and not mine. But who is to say that it's theirs if they do not have a document? Good morning. Seddon here. Forgive me troubling you, but can you tell me, has Lucky turned up at your house by any chance?
Yes, he has.
Ah, do you know when he came?
Pardon?
Do you know any idea when he arrived?
I've no idea, Captain Seddon. I came in late last night from work, and I don't like being woken up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I'm so sorry.
Shifts. Now, please don't pester me again. He'll be returned shortly.
Well, do you want me to come round, and if so, after what time?
Come round here. I'll bring him round, okay?
Bring him round.
Right, bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. I'm sorry to tell you that sometime in the last hour, my fence breaker has evidently broken a hole, and those two naughty dogs have disappeared. Has Lucky turned up?
I'm glad I'm able to make a comment. Is him in order?
ATV.
Mr. Harry Papadakis.
Speaking.
Good morning to you. It's Captain Seddon here on behalf of Mrs. Stubbs. The only reason I'm ringing you is that I was out in the latter part of yesterday, so if you had tried to get me, you wouldn't have got in contact. Now, shortly after that, the bell rang. No. She said she was receiving a guest from Germany who was concerned in the Putzelpuppen.
Yes.
So by this time, I was feeling rather tired, as you have been, and I hadn't had a siesta. So I said, right, when your guest comes, I will disappear up into the roof and have a siesta.
Yes.
Oh, and then there was an outcry. Oh, everything will get dirty and so forth. I said, well, never mind, I'm going to have a siesta. So the bell rang, and I promptly disappeared upstairs into the roof and went and had a siesta. And from time to time, I came down again to see whether this guest had gone and whether I could reappear again. And always I heard conversation coming out of the Pritzelpuppen rooms at the other end. So I quietly disappeared upstairs and continued my siesta. And after 1.5 hours, I came down. By this time, the pupping and the putzling had stopped, and they had arrived at the kitchen. So I was then introduced to this little woman, who is she calls herself a doll. What is that? Dolologe. Have you ever heard that word before?
No.
Well, she tells me it comes from American, a dollologist. It translates into German as a dolologe. Someone who is a specialist in the history of dolls. Well, she is a dollologe, and she was representing the interests of some highly placed police officer in Germany, who, as a hobby, is an absolutely fascinated dollologe. And he had sent her over to England to do research amongst any people he could find, or she could find, who knew anything about dolls. And she somehow found out about Editha with her wax dolls, so she'd come to see her. And they'd evidently had a very long discussion all about these dolls, going on for 1.5 hours while I was having my siesta. So thereupon, Editha began to cook a meal for the dollologe, who was a nice little woman who came from some suburb of Stuttgart, and for myself. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, it's Morris. Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
I thought I would ring you straight away because I've made the promised photocopies.
Oh,
I'm in the process of preparing those herbs.
Okay.
And I thought that what I read was so horrible that I thought I would not only send you the copies, but I would read you what is written on those copies before I send them. Because there is something I'd forgotten which makes it worse. Oh, by the way, I'm also sending you, in case it's useful to you, two A4 pages photocopied, constituting a list of, quote, dangerous food additives. You know these E numbers, E100, E126 and all that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Well, curiously enough, for some strange reason, the French hospital authorities have seen fit to publish a list of these things, or the main ones, saying which ones are harmless, which are dangerous, which are forbidden, which are suspicious, which are very dangerous, which are carcinogenic products, and so on. Oh, and which create digestive disturbances, which create blood pressure incidents, and so forth. So I thought that might interest you.
Yes, that's very kind of you. They do.
Not at all. Now I'm going, if I may, to read you this article in this American paper.
Yeah.
It's a newspaper. I don't even know the name of the paper it comes out of. It's page 16, part Roman 3, Friday, April the 21st, 1989. And it's a newspaper local to the Los Angeles area, which is where I was at the time.
Yes.
Kenny Easley, E-A-S-L-E-Y, former, this is slightly difficult to read, Seattle, Seahawks safety. Now, safety, I think, is some American word meaning some kind of member of a football team. Could it mean a goalkeeper or something like that? Has sued the National Football League team, claiming that he was allowed to play through the 1987 season without being told he had an irreversible kidney ailment that eventually ended his career. Easley's suit, S-U-I-T, alleges that his kidneys were ruined by large doses of ibuprofen, described here as a pain reliever. I think it's also a thing which reduces inflammation.
Yes, I do have some anti-inflammation drugs about.
I think it is an anti-inflammatory, a pain reliever. The 30-year-old former All-Pro, P-R-O, undergoes dialysis 3 times a week. Easley's 7-year career ended last year after the kidney ailment was diagnosed. The discovery was made during a physical, which is presumably a physical examination, when the Seahawks, presumably a team, attempted to trade Easley to the Phoenix Cardinals, presumably another team. Easley's suit in King, K-I-N-G, County, presumably a district, Superior Court, alleges that his kidney problem was caused or substantially aggravated by large doses of ADVIL, a brand name for ibuprofen. While he was recovering from ankle surgery in 1986, the suit seeks an unspecified amount for loss of income, medical costs, reduction in earning capacity, mental and physical pain and suffering, and shortened life expectancy.
Gosh.
So I thought you ought to know that.
Yes.
Now that is that item. Now we go on to this German book. Now they don't list ibuprofen as such. Well, they do and they don't. But they list it under a trade name, which effectively is the same thing. They list a particular version of it available in Germany called Brufen, B-R-U-F-E-N, in brackets available in the BRD, which is the Federal Republic of West Germany. This is a 1983 book, you see. And it's available in tablets and also in Zäpfchen. Zäpfchen, I don't even know what you call it in English. It's a thing you insert into the anus and it dissolves into the gut.
Yes, I've heard about that. I've also had Brufen in tablets too.
You have?
Yes.
Well, Brufen is ibuprofen. It's ibuprofen. It's the same thing.
Yes. But several of the tablets I noticed seem to have Brufen worked into their names, the trade names now.
Well, that appears to be a product principally available in Germany and Austria.
Yes.
Now, here, under the wichtigste Nebenwirkungen, the most important secondary or effects, or if you like, side effects. Kopfschmerzen, pains in the head. Magen-Darm-Störungen, disturbances of the stomach and the intestine. Zentral-Nervöse Störungen, disturbances of the central nervous system, very dangerous. In brackets, ZB, zum Beispiel, meaning, for example, Schwindel, which means giddiness. Sehstörungen, disturbance of the vision. And to that I have added in my own handwriting, Nierenvernichtung, destruction of the kidneys.
Yes.
So that is that item. Now here is another version of Profen, which I'm going to, a thing called Alrheumin, A-L-R-H-E-U-M-I-N. Rheumin is obviously a title referring to rheumatism.
Yeah.
Again, it's the same, basically the same substance. It's called Keto, K-E-T-O, Profen. And here we have the most significant Nebenwirkung and secondary effect, headaches again, Blutschäden, damages to the blood system, Zentralnervöse Störungen, central nervous derangements, zum Beispiel Schwindel, for instance, giddiness, Sehstörungen, disturbances of the vision, and Magen-Darm-Störungen, disturbances of the stomach and the intestine. So that's that one. Now we go on into something really rather horrifying on the subject of materials for the joints. Neuigkeiten mit bösen Überraschungen. New innovations with evil surprises. We must more particularly warn against the ingestion of new, as yet little tried substances. There's a general warning against this. An example of this is a substance called Coxygon, which Great Britain comes into this, by the way. This medicine was brought upon the market with an enormous expenditure on advertising. Secondary effects or side effects, however, by the manufacturers are often too little researched or they are played down. In the Federal Republic of Germany, Coxygon was introduced on the 1st of February 1981, which was said to be so sensational in effect that it was paving a new road in the treatment of rheumatics. In other words, it was something revolutionary, marvellous. Mm. At the end of that same year, Coxygon was the third most successful of all new medical substances sold in the Federal Republic. Successful, I think they probably mean in terms of turnover. The manufacturing firm, the USA pharmaceutical giant Eli-Lilly, Eli Lilly, achieved therewith almost 30% of its complete turnover in the Federal Republic of Germany. In other words, nearly 30% of all the medical products sold by Eli Lilly in the Federal Republic of Germany in that year was this particular substance. In August 1982, this is now about a year and a half later, Coxygon suddenly had to be withdrawn from the market after it had, at first in Britain, but then afterwards also in the Federal Republic, been brought into connection with many dozens of cases of death.
Gosh.
Of death. And this is the same thing. It's Profen. It's merely under a different name.
Yes.
And then also in viele Dutzend Todes...
If you do decide you want me for a private beetle be dead, you and I will be so independent, we will live on the run, picketing for every cause, fighting all unjust laws. Happy we will be, just you, J. Edgar Hoover and me.
In connection with these ailments.
Yes.
I suppose it's connected with depression.
Yes.
And that is lack of libido.
Sorry, you've lost me with another strange word. What is it? I've heard it, I don't know what it means.
Libido?
Yes.
I suppose this means sexual desire.
Ah, so?
It's the word all the doctors use for lack of interest in sex.
Yes. Well, now, I'm the last person to talk about sex, because as I told you the other day, I'm a defect of creation, in that I do not go to bed with either sex. But I would say to you, from what little, from my own personal experience, that as far as I'm aware, people are born into this world with widely varying degrees of sexual desire. There are those who are hotly heterosexual, there are those who are hotly homosexual, and then there is a huge range between these two extremes of people with varying degrees of the one or the other. Then there are those who have a blend of both forms of sexuality, and then there are people who really have no particular interest in sex at all. If this is a constant, a more or less constant state, then I don't think it's anything to worry about. I think it's just the way we're created.
Yes, I mention it in case, well, let's put it this way, people who work in the psychiatric field get very hit up about this. and feel there's something wrong. And I mention it in case it's connected with the sort of lack of drive and lack of motivation. And also in case you've come across it before and do something with the herbs on it.
Yes, I can certainly do. I can certainly so arrange the herbal blend that you may experience an increase. Forgive my asking you a very frank question, but have you always had this lack of sexual drive, or is this something that has developed with time?
Always.
Sorry?
I've always had it.
Yes. And does it go up and down at all, or is it constantly low?
Oh, constantly low.
Well, do you have any sexual drive at all?
Almost none. Most of the time, not at all. But just from time to time, it might be in evidence.
Yes. And forgive me asking you another personal question. When it is in evidence, is it towards towards the opposite sex or towards your own sex?
Well, it doesn't direct itself at other people at all. It's just a sort of, call it physical or part of the psyche. But it doesn't get as far as, becoming personalised, if you see what I mean.
Yes, I see. On this particular point, I would say that I cannot tell you from past experience to what extent the herbs will or will not influence this. Nor can I tell you, I do not know enough about it, quite simply, I cannot tell you to what extent this is or is not important. What I would say is this, that it is generally argued that when people's sexual drive diminishes, it is quite often associated with a sickness of some kind or other.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it into other terms, it is often argued that those people who have got a considerable sex drive quite often are also healthy people. But having said all that, I think I consider myself reasonably healthy, and I can't say that I have sexual drive.
Okay.
So I don't really think that is anything very much to worry about.
I mention it partly because, as I say, the psychiatrists get hit up, partly because I feel it's connected with my own lack of drive in general.
Yes, it possibly is. We all vary in these things enormously. And as to psychiatrists, I will be perfectly frank with you and tell you that in my very humble opinion, and I'm not in any way qualified to pass this opinion, but I do pass it as a common sense day-to-day observation, it is my impression that psychiatrists seem to be able to do very little for people.
That's been my experience too, yes.
I don't really think that they're, frankly, that they're much use.
Yes.
So I wouldn't worry very much about their opinion.
I see, yeah.
But anyway, don't worry. I will get on with these herbs.
I just thought this could be relevant to what you're making up for me.
Yes, it can indeed be relevant, and it is a factor that I shall bear in mind in the make-up of the herbs. Because had you not mentioned that, I might have left various things out.
Okay.
Which I shall now not leave out.
All right, fine. So glad to run you again.
Yes, indeed. I've been unable to get hold of the people I have to contact by telephone, and therefore I still can't give you any information as to when it's going to be.
No, I wasn't expecting that.
All right. It may be today, and it may not be today.
Okay.
But it'll be in the next, either today or in the next few days.
Well, many thanks indeed, Warren.
And the fee I charge for this, I think I told you, was £25.
That's right, yes.
Righto. Good. Well, we'll be in touch.
Okay, right.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
071-589-589-6142.
Now, if she could, I shall not be available on my number. I shall be going out in about 10 minutes.
Yes.
Thereafter, I shan't be available on my own number today. Um...
assuming that all is well tomorrow morning, which of course it may not be, let's be pessimistic, something may go wrong during the night. I don't think it will, but it always could. But if all is well, I would then be available to bring it down to you as soon as you would like it.
Well, and if you find this, discuss it tomorrow morning and find a convenient day for all parties when perhaps you could bring it down.
Yes, surely.
Test it on site, all right?
Yes, and I would be grateful, as and when we arrange that, if you could kindly have the money available in cash to be paid to me when I deliver and set the machine up to you, in a total of 825.
I probably can't, but you'll have to accept a cheque, probably. We'll wait and see what happens when we know the day you're coming down and whether or not I can get the cash available.
I'm terribly sorry, but I have a very firm accountant. He doesn't allow me to accept cheques unless they're within the limit covered by a cheque guarantee card. It is a case of the innocent majority suffering from a not innocent minority who give me bouncing cheques.
All right, I assure you my cheques will not be bouncing.
Well, I believe you, sir, but nevertheless I can't deviate from what my accountant postulates. I have had problems of this kind. And I don't even have a secretary. I'm a one-man business. I simply have a chartered accountant at a distance. And I can't cope with checks. I'm awfully sorry.
Shut up for a minute. If you want cash, I'll give it to you at a 10% discount.
Well, I feel that is really unreasonable. I've never heard of that before.
If you won't accept my check as a gentleman, then quite frankly, I am very, very surprised.
I can only say, sir, that I have had to make this condition now for the past 3 years, and everybody I've dealt with has been considerate enough to agree to do it.
All right, I'll settle for a 5% discount.
Sorry?
I'll settle for a 5% discount.
I think if you don't mind, I'd better consult with my accountant. This is the first time anybody has put this to me.
No. Well, okay, fine. But I mean, look, I've been in business for 30 years. I'm not without means. And any check that you're given by either my wife or myself will, in fact, be met. If you want cash, we'll take a 5% discount.
You see, it isn't. Please understand me clearly. I'm a meticulously correct person, and this has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with tax evasion, in case you should think that that is what it is. Every single penny that I'm paid is meticulously declared. It is quite simply a question of making sure that I do not get checks that bounce.
Shut up for a moment. I also run 3 businesses. I am, like you, totally meticulous. I have accountants, lawyers, etc., who look after my interests. I would not dream of trying to fiddle a penny out of anybody. But if somebody wants to play around with cash, then I believe that discounts are in order.
Well, I think I will have to take advice on that from my accountant, and I will contact you again about it.
Do that. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello?
Hello. I've consulted my accountant. I fully sympathise with you and understand your feelings, because I too get frightfully annoyed sometimes these days when people doubt my checks. It's very annoying and rather infuriating, but I suppose it is the fact that we do live in times, sadly, where people aren't as correct with checks as we were, you know, in our youth.
I would totally accept that.
Well, now, what he has instructed me to do is to ask you if you would be kind enough to give me the name and address of your bank branch so that my bank may contact yours and make sure, and then I shall be happy to take your check.
Well, now, the answer is whichever you like. I mean, quite frankly, it would obviously be much more beneficial to me to give you cash at a 5% discount than it would be to give you a cheque, and then you have no queries in your mind whatsoever.
Oh, I do see that. No, but frankly, I think he tells me that if the bank say it's all right, that's absolutely fine, there's no problem.
A minute. My bank will not give you any details about my account or my wife's account unless they have a written authorization from either of us.
No, he isn't suggesting that at all. What he tells me that the system that exists is quite simply this, that my bank, once having the name and address of your bank, contact your bank and inquire about the cheque in advance of the cheque being paid, the sum of £825. And apparently, if your bank tell my bank that that is perfectly in order, which apparently is a perfectly normal thing to do, there is then no problem.
Quite frankly, I put the telephone away from my ear because you won't listen to me. All you're going to get is a banker's reference. Now, that does not mean that, in fact, the money is in the account. Now, that's my advice to you.
Dear, dear, dear. This gets more complicated all the time.
Unfortunately, my bank will not give you any details of my account or what I'm worth without written authorization from me or my wife, in her case of her account. I suggest you settle for the 825, the 5% discount, pound notes, and if you'll ring me when you're ready, I will try and make certain that I've got that cash. In fact, I will make certain that I've got that cash available for you.
I would have much rather, you see, I didn't estimate this thing on a discounted basis. However, if that's how you want to do it, I suppose we better do it that way.
Shut up again, will you? If you want my bank's address and my wife's bank's address, I will give it to you with pleasure.
Right. Would you please give me your... Well, I don't know. If it's going to be your cheque, would you please give me your bank's address? If it's going to be your wife's cheque, would you please give me hers?
Would you shut up? It's just exactly the same bank.
Fine.
The other thing is that you will want to know is the name of the two accounts, and we haven't decided on whose cheque we're going to write it out yet. I still strongly recommend you take cash.
I tend to go by what my accountant advises. He says the first choice here, he sees no reason to doubt your account at all, subject to your bank talking to my bank, and therefore I tend to favour that method.
Well, will you please? And you can check the other banks. Now, you can't get this information yourself. Your accountant can't get it. The only person who can get it is your bank manager ringing our bank manager.
Yes, of course. That's what he told me.
That's right. Now, my strong advice to you, having been in business for 30 years, is take cash at a 5% discount.
Well, thank you for the information, sir. I will again contact my accountant.
Do that. He works after hours.
Well, he's a very old friend, and rather like me, he operates a very small business on the basis that we both have. Kunde ist König, the client is king. In other words, we talk to one another when we need to, regardless of hours. Thank you so much. I hope to contact you again in the morning to tell you further news.
I can, but I won't be here.
Oh, you won't be there?
No, not tomorrow morning. I'll try tomorrow afternoon, all about this time tomorrow evening.
Prior to what time in the morning can I reach you?
7 o'clock.
May I ring you then?
You may, with the grace of pleasure.
I'll ring you in the morning. Well, thank you for your advice.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Good night.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.